Hello, and welcome to the Hull Libraries podcast. In this episode, we had a chat with Keith from local band The Quicksilver Kings. We talked to Keith about the ins and outs of the songwriting process, the crossover between music and poetry, plus the music scene in Hull, and what makes the city so special.
But we sort of got started when I was about 16, started writing songs and lyrics, and I just kept them for years in a shoebox and I never told anybody. And then one day I wrote this song for a girl, and this other girl said, "I love that song you wrote for your girlfriend," and give me this little, like, I think it was like an audition, but it was sort of like X Factor, something like that. But it was at the Warren in town, just like a youth centre, I suppose. And then you went in and did a little audition. I just played them a couple of demos. And a man called Stuart Baxter, who was out of a band called Life, who were doing quite well from Hull, he said, "Right, you're good. I'd work with you and we can do some tracks." So did some tracks with him, started doing a few gigs. And then eventually I met my bandmates and we kept sort of chatting about, because we liked similar music, that we should do some work together. And then we did, I started a band with him. And then a couple of weeks later, another friend of mine said to me, "You need to come meet my cousin. He writes songs, but he's never played them to anybody. You should come meet him." So I went and met him, and he was like, "We should write a song together." So me and him wrote like two songs. This was my bandmate, Jamie, who looks a bit like Jesus, as they always point out. My other one, Steve, looks a bit like Gandalf, the wizard. So I said to him, "Why don't you join my band?" And he said, "Well, you're going to ask him?" I said, "No one cares. We've only been going like a couple of weeks." And I said, and I thought it's better to have two writers, because then you swap ideas. Like, and so say I wrote a song with four verses and a chorus and it needs a middle eight. My bandmate would fix the middle. So I've got a middle eight and vice versa. He might send me half a song and then I'll write the other half. So it's kind of the bits you get stuck on, the other person kind of fills you in on.
So you gigged a little bit on your own and then met the others and created the band, and it kind of grew over time.
Yeah, it was sort of like, because I had done some gigs. I think Steve had been in some bands as well before. But yeah, we just did a couple on my own. And again, obviously, we didn't have a name, so people was just booking us as me, as Keith Aggett. But eventually, it was like, "We need a name." So I wanted to be called the Super Kings, because I used to smoke Richmond Super Kings, but someone's already got that in America.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, of course, you have to check the name then, do you?
Yeah, so you have to check, obviously. I mean, we could have been the UK one, I guess, but luckily was that I thought it's got to be some at the, so we like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. So then luckily my bandmate Steve had a T-shirt on that said Quicksilver. So I thought, stick that with Kings, boom.
There you go, job done.
It's quite hard for anyone starting a band to think of a name that everyone will remember, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I was just lucky there. And then, yeah, just been at it ever since.
Because you gig quite a lot in the city, don't you? I do see your name popping up all over on posters. And
I suppose when you've been doing it for, like, when you first start, you just take any gig they offer you. And then when you've been going at it so long, you kind of, I mean, you still like the thing of writing songs and stuff and going out and gigging, but you kind of stop chasing it and you wait for them to kind of message you and they'll offer you stuff. "Do you want to play this gig in Derby?" Or, I mean, we got loads of offers for weddings, and I'm like, put by people who had seen us at these Trinity things, and we say, "We're not really a covers band, you know." I said, "We don't care, we'll just want to book you." So I used to think, well, if your guests want to wear a load of songs I've never heard before, then it's up to you. But yeah, kind of. You just kind of wait to see what comes in. But when you first start, you've kind of got to email people and kind of chase it, haven't you? I suppose it's as much as you put in.
Do you have a residency anywhere or a regular spot?
No, we did when we first started, but they've become kind of like boring. Like, and then you end up hating that gig because you go, "Oh, do I have to go to this?" It's better when it's somewhere different, isn't it? But yeah, I think like everybody, when you first start, they offer you one somewhere and go, or they'll always say, run an open mic, and you go, great. And then 1 week, no one will show up, so you've got to play for like 2 hours. And then we used to just put our money behind the bar, and all our friends would go, hey, just get a drink. And then you think, wait a minute, we've just done all that, and there's nothing to show for it. But yeah, we certainly used to. We used to be at Queen's. I think that we took over that one for a while, but we soon learned, don't bother, it makes it like a job then.
So you say you're one of the writers with your friend James. Jamie, sorry. So did you get any training in that, or have you learnt the task and like the skill by yourself?
I suppose you learn from the people you like, don't you? I mean, when I was a kid, I was always reading, books by of the Beatles and Dylan. So you kind of just think, oh, that's how they did it. So you get a good title, and then, well, that's the title. That's 50% of the job done. So yeah, kind of just taught ourselves in that retrospect. But me and Jamie do most of the writing. But Steve, our guitarist, I mean, he don't write as much like lyrics and stuff, but he'll bring us like a good tune, and we'll go, can we write some lyrics to it? And we'll say yeah. So it's kind of shared. I mean, them two do more the music, because like my songs, I tend to, if I don't play an instrument, I spend more time on the lyrics. So, but I can hear like tunes in my head, so sometimes I'll sing them something and go like this, da 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 da, and then they'll like work that out. So it works a million different ways with us all the time. We've done it where the three of us have been in a room and then wrote a song. Just, but yeah, 9 times out of 10, me and Jamie would, when we first started, every Wednesday, get together, write 2 songs, sometimes three, before midnight. Then we'd get Steve round, he'd learn them on the Thursday, and then the Friday we'd just go to an open mic night and play the songs we wrote on the Wednesday. But you had to get like three done before midnight. And luckily, me and Jamie always had plenty of ideas. I mean, I write every day, because I've got a publishing deal as well for like poetry. So I'm just up constantly writing all the time. So we'd always have an idea. Like if he had a tune, I'd go, right, I've written these 50 poems today, and then we can always do it like that. So, or like I said, I might hear something in my head, like, what's got this melody going around in my head? Or like sometimes I'd say, oh, I want to write a song like that. And then you'd copy that kind of thing. Let's write one like Dylan did, like this, and then you copy that thing. But no, none of us was trained in it. I'm glad, really. It's good not knowing how to do it.
So your influences, like you've mentioned a few, Dylan, the Beatles, have you got any others that you really like to listen to still to this day that are your favourites?
Well, another one, I like Oasis and then Noel Gallagher, and he always taught me that if there's something you like, nick it. Why not? It's like, if you like that, oh, I'll have a bit of that. If I'd kind of do it that way, I always let it fall out the sky and just, oh, that's a good title. I'll switch that round a bit, make it my own. So, I mean, he taught me a lot. So, but yeah, mainly like it's the ones we mainly like the Beatles, Dylan, the Stones, all like the sort of giants, really. They kind of teach you how to do it. And in fact, obviously, you get to meet all the other bands and stuff, and everybody likes those kind of bands, because it's they kind of show you how to do your job, don't they? I guess.
Yeah. So are you from local? Did you go to schools in Hull or colleges?
Yeah, we all know. I think Jamie, because he's an engineer, he went to like university. But me and Steve were, let's leave school. I mean, I was always mucking about at school. I liked poetry. Well, I remember being not paying attention, and then my English teacher one day showed us how this poem took this poem apart and said, oh, you do this and you compare something. And I thought, bloody easy, I could do that. So that kind of stuck in me. But at school, I was always chin wagging at the back, shut up. And Jamie was probably, yeah, because he wanted to be an engineer, he went to like university and stuff. But me and him actually went to the same school, David Lister, no longer there now, knocked it down. Yeah. And then Steve, God knows where he went to school. He's a lot older than me and Jamie, you see.
Right.
I think probably went to school in the army or
It's got
something.
more stories.
His school will definitely. being knocked down. Sorry for swearing anyway.
I was
going
to say, can you
like
stop?
A like
Edit
second
it
language,
all
you
out.
mean? Your editor is going to be like, edit, edit.
My colleague won't be happy.
I'll try to remember. Although I have read that people who swear tend to be more honest and more intellectual.
Oh, right. Well, I'm all right.
That's
then.
What I always tell people when they tell me off at work. I go, I am. Hey, I used to be a bugger for it on the radio, like the bringers in on the BBC, and I could just see these faces. And I'd go, finally. They go, oh, what's it going to say?
So just picking up on your point about the poetry at school, would you kind of agree, because I think, but that's just my personal opinion, that songwriting and the lyrics in a song and poetry are quite very similar with how they're laid out and the rhythm and the point behind them and the story. So maybe that's where your first kind of love for it started.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I mean, it's just good. I think you're right. I mean, I've said this, some people who I've said it to, like you just said that, I'll say, oh, I think that, and they'll say, oh, I totally disagree. But I think it does, and for the simple reason, I've done it before where I've just wrote like a poem, and then my bandmate Jamie's gone, oh, there's a rhythm to that, and then just put a tune to it. And I thought, oh, wow, that's amazing, because he said it's the rhythm of the words. And I always try to, when we're doing the lyrics, we Jamie both do, but we try to work out, oh, how many syllables, or let's get three S words in there. So they go, so there is kind of something in that. I mean, yeah, definitely. But poetry is a, because I think with, I mean, I always say to people who say to me, oh, do you write? And that, and I always say, you've got to read, because reading makes you. I mean, I know plenty of songwriters who don't read and they're all right, but you can tell it's something to do with the language, I think, because you pick up on imagery and how a scene's set up. And so, yeah, I definitely think the two correlate for sure.
So you're a keen reader as well?
Love reading. Yeah,
What do
man.
you like to read?
I don't read much fiction. My mum is a big fiction reader. So, like in my family, there's only me and my mum and my oldest niece who read. Everybody else says it's boring. And but I tend to read like lots of poetry. I listen to Charles Bukowski. Love that guy. Yeah, they're normally about music or factual things like psychology or philosophy or.
Yeah, because that's quite interesting, really, because that's very factual, facts and figures and real life information. But poetry, you could say, is quite creative, imaginary, and fiction.
And that's why people always, when my mum will give me one, like my mum loves murder mysteries, and she'll go, oh, read this. And I go, I can't read fiction. And she always says the same to me. She goes, how did you write all these songs? And you know, so it's different making them up. Because I said, I'll read poetry, which again is, I suppose that's fiction as well, like you said. But yeah, I think there's something in it with the poetry that makes me feel those emotions. And I try to do the same. I always think I want the person reading it or listening to it to feel something, so there must be something in that. But yeah, I don't find it odd that I don't read fiction when poetry is fiction, I guess, isn't it?
And so you're working on stuff at the moment, did you say? You've got a publishing deal.
That won't be out till next year. But I am basically, because I'd always wrote songs, but I knew I loved writing poetry, I thought whenever our band splits up, I thought it'd be good to do a book. And yeah, one day these people wrote to me and said, oh, can we publish this poem that you wrote? And it was about the economy. And I wrote it ages ago. And I.
It's a hot topic now.
Well, it was, what was it? I was listening to a song by Bob Dylan, and there's this line in it that says, The Empress Ballroom. And I thought, oh, I like that. Love that. I just liked that, Empress Ballroom. And then I saw another song called City of Goals. And I thought, oh, I'll stick them two together. Empress Ballroom in the City. That's a mental title. I thought, oh, you could use that as like an analogy, but look around at the state of things. And obviously we've got more that the politicians are far away from the poor people. And I just wrote this thing and they said, oh, we think it's universal. And they said, we can't give any money for it, but we don't just publish anyone. Can we publish it? So I said, oh, yeah, of course. So then I thought, well, I wonder if someone had let me do a full book. So I just found some good publishers. So there's a lot of fake ones out there. So I had to find ones that are proper legit publishing companies. And I just emailed them and I said, if you give me a job, I'll work bloody hard for you. I said, I write every day. And I just sent them 50 random ones. I've got like a selection. I did some about like politics, religion, love. I just sent them like 50 random ones. And then they said, oh, we reject about 85% of people. Don't get your hopes up, basically. And I completely forgot about it. And then, yeah, they emailed me back saying, wow, we loved it. Would you like a deal? I was like, yes, please. So it takes about 18 months to get it all done. So that was literally just before Christmas. So it won't be out well next year sometime. But all leftover stuff that I had, I was, like I said to my bandmates, I said, oh, I was going to do it when we finished, whenever we stopped.
And you say you write every day, because that's quite a commitment and a discipline.
I don't mean to. It's like I got a title this morning before I was going out. So then I think, oh, later on, when I come back, I'll work on that. But I can't help, like I said, I'll just wait for them to, and then I'll just sit and spend hours just trying to work out what that will be. But I don't mean to. Like I said, I just let them fall out the sky rather than chasing it, looking for it. I had some girl say to me the other day, she's like, is this thing you wrote about me? So I was like, don't look into hidden meanings. But I said, if I told you how I did that, I said, you'd go, what? But I said, yeah, I just wait for it to fall out the sky. And that's literally it, right? But it is good to do it every day, because then you get lots and lots of.
So your mind must be busy all the time of thoughts. Do you capture them when you're at work? Have you got anywhere you jot it down, or so you don't forget?
I do it, like, cause I like to write in motion. So, like, say I'm writing something, I'll have some music on and I'll walk up and down sort of the thought in my head, like you're going back and forth with it. Oh, I go for a walk, just go for a walk. And on the walk, I mean, I'll tag you an example of what I mean. One day I had this song and I'd seen this thing on a birthday card, and it said, just for you. So I'm singing this crummy song. Just for you, I'd write a love song. Just for you, I'd. And I thought, this is bloody rubbish. And I was walking down there, Lambeth, and there's a little street down there called Cherry Lane. And I thought, oh, that's a bit. And then I could do something about, like, pull, and all these images I had of being like a kid, like, you know, a tire swing and all that. So just seeing this sign, I changed it to something like, Cherry Lane, there's an old post office, a barber shop, and a bus stop too. Suburban skies, a graffitied garage, a tie swing for me and you. A whoppity whoppity dance. And now I'm right, where's the rest of this story go? But that was just from seeing the sign on the, you know, walking along. So I think there's something in going out for a walk, because you definitely see things. And
definitely, you just absorb the environment around you, don't you? And I think it clears your mind as well, so you probably get more creative.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I always say that as well. I mean, because I work in a nursing home and we deal with people with obviously mental health issues, and it does keep your mind active and set. And because I think as well, you're not holding on to your emotions. So like if someone knocks me off, you know, right, I'm going to write something, get it off your chest, and then you don't hold on to your emotions.
So it's like self-care and therapy for you as well.
It is. Again, me and Jamie say it all the time. It's like having a secret psychiatrist where you can go and tell your worries, your fears, yeah, and it does get it off your chest. And then you're not carrying it around with you, I guess. You feel better, like you've resolved something.
And you don't play instruments at all?
Well, I mean, I didn't. Again, same thing. It's weird because people always go to me, oh, you've got a great voice when we do like the gigs. And I always say, oh, I just got the job no one wanted, because I thought I could just write and let somebody else sing them. And they said, no, you've got to bloody sing as well.
So you've had no training in that either?
No training in that either.
That's brilliant. I mean. It's just such a good model, though, isn't it, to show people you can do this stuff and go for
it. Well, that's what I mean. It's a bit like at Christmas, my niece, 1 year, when she was about 8 years old, all the young kids about, four and five were colouring in and drawing on the floor. My youngest niece went over to me at the time. She said, Uncle Keith, I'll do all drawings. So I said, you go draw. She went, I can't. Well, what do you mean you can't? I went, of course you can. I went, there's no right or wrong. Just get somewhere and start doing this. And then she just literally started. She's like, oh my God, I can. I went, you don't need any training to sort of have a go, do you? I mean, like we always say, we're not technically the best. We don't. I mean, there's people who go, bloody hell, they're like real good. But for what we do, then it works for some reason. Like I said, I'm not technically the best singer, but I just sing with, like, I mean it. and that seems to, because obviously if you write the lyrics, you know what it means. So I just sing like, oh, I know what this means. And then it, even if you're out of key or out of time, it resonates with someone, doesn't it? I guess as long as you mean it and you do it from your heart, then it always seems to resonate with people. Anyone can do it. I've always said it. It's like the girls at my work will say, how did you? I go, you can do it. No, I can't. Well, you're already failing at it because you aren't even going to try. I would say, what kind of thing would you write? Well, anyone can do it.
It's confidence, I think, and having that belief in yourself that you've got it, you can do it. And having a go, maybe, do you think?
Definitely. I think as well, I mean, when you're in a band, it's a lot easier, because I always feel sorry for the solo people who've got to get up there and on the totally on the road. Whereas when you're in a band, you share the experience and you learn together. And when you get up on stage, let's say someone plays a chord wrong or I sing, you all take the flak for it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, that one, that was a, because let's face it, anyone who is in a band, you'll have 5 or 6 gigs that are great. Yeah, this is brilliant. Then you'll have this one night where everything just goes wrong. And you're like, oh, that was slow. We played that one too slow. There was a chord wrong there. And you kind of beat yourself up a bit and you'll hear it back on a video going, hear it cut, and you go, oh, that wasn't that bad. But in your head, you go, you just, it lasted for like 1/2 a second and it felt like, well, that's what I always think of. When you're in a band, they, that gives you the confidence, because if I go in going, I've got this great idea, and the other two go, that is a good idea, you go, I knew it. But yeah, if you go in with a crummy idea and you think it's great and someone says, that's rubbish, you go, all right, then maybe it's not as good. So yeah, definitely working in a group is a lot, it's a lot more fun, and you learn your mistakes quicker, I guess.
So you've been together 10 years and it's still going strong?
Well, we recorded 18 new songs just before COVID happened, and we'd had a plan because we're very lapsy-daisy, like I said, because we work, and we've got thousands of songs. Like I said, me and Jamie have both been writing since we were 16. I normally write about 70 a year, so there's no way you're ever going to get 70 done in a year. But what we normally do, we'll go to a studio and then get a producer, and then we just keep going. I mean, the last guy we recorded with, I think we played it, and said, oh, can we record these two? And me and Jamie had only just written them like the night before, and he's like, can we record them as well? And that's 20. You don't need 20 for an album. But we've had it for a while and just sat on it for ages. Like, oh, remember we did another album just before COVID was released. That I think we're going to release that in about March and then start on another one. But yeah, again, it's just finding the time and stuff, but we're still gigging stuff. I mean, we've got a, I think we've got a gig this weekend actually in, I want to say, is it Derby?
So you gig outside of Hull and do you go all over the country?
Well, anywhere we'll have us back.
Have you got any favourite spots in Hull?
Oh, all of them in Hull. Yeah, they're all great in Hull. I mean, again, it's the same thing where you try not to do too many in Hull, because people will go, like, we're doing a gig to launch our album, and one of our friends said, oh, you should do it at Heseltown Hall. So we just had to apply for the licence to do it at Heseltown Hall. He said, if you do it in Hull, you're competing with other nights going on, so there might be another band playing.
How do you find the music culture in Hull?
Oh, it's great. Again, I mean, like when you first start, you go to all the open mic nights, so you meet everybody, but then everybody who's been together as long as us, so like your Jodie McKenna's and AVR and people like that, and Happy Endings and Late Night Marauders, people like that, you kind of stop going to the open mics because you know the people who, I mean, there's some great bands there. I mean, I couldn't name more, but my mind's gone blank. But you meet all those people. But I went one night after we'd done a gig at the Trinity Market Square with Rich Stevenson and someone else. And then we went to this little open mic. I thought, let's go get a beer. And then we met these youngsters coming up, like, oh, they're all right. So they're sort of, you see the same thing happen. It's like a cycle, in it. And you go, oh, right. But you kind of miss out on the newer ones because you stop going to the open mic nights. Because obviously once you've been a while, you don't need to, you want to go to those places just so someone will offer you another gig. But yeah, but I think, yeah, it's fabulous. There's some amazing, amazing people in all that. Everywhere you look, it's like, wow, can't believe. Like, I mean, you saying that, there's a bloke at my work, our handyman, who came up to me one day and said, "I didn't realise you was in a band. Someone showed me a video of you on you." I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "Good, yeah." He said, "I didn't know." So he said, "Are there any other?" I said, "Oh, there's loads of good bands in Hull." Well, he loves it now. He's been to see Pels Cabaret and another one. He said, "I love them." And he went to see Audrey and Late Night Marauders. He said, "Man, I didn't realise there was all these great." I said, "Yeah, man." And that just shows you, because I was the same when I first. Well, I thought I was the only one. I thought I've never met anyone else, especially because I lived on Preston Road. None of my mates ever went. Everyone was just into get pissed, take loads of drugs. That was it. No one was bothered or anything else. So you're reading a book. What's wrong with you? So nobody ever mentioned it once till I met and went in for this audition, and I met other people like man, you know, Bob Dylan, finally someone else. But yeah, it wasn't really as I used to think. Oh, I must be the only one, you know, who like write songs. So when I met someone else, like, "You write songs as well? Oh, good. Yeah, where you been all my life?" But there's absolutely, yeah, loads of people who do it. Yeah, we're very lucky. And in fact, I tell you what, another testament, some places where you go play, like outside of Hull, like for some like little festivals and things like that, it is overrun with people from Hull, which is, it just shows you, doesn't it? Yeah, and you go, "Oh man," it's like there'll be a couple of people there from Manchester or Leeds or something, but it's overrun with people from Hull. So that just kind of shows you in itself. But me and Jodie McKenna always say it must be something about living in a poor area or something, or the depravity kind of makes people want to do something creative, maybe.
They say it's dock cities, don't they? Like Liverpool, where you get such a mix of cultures coming through over the decades that you get like this rich culture of music and art and.
I think you're right. It's like I took a lady from my work. She was going to an eye hospital appointment, and when she'd finished, I didn't realise in the eye clinic in Hull they've got Philip Larkin's glasses. Obviously, I've got Philip Larkin's collected poems. Obviously, he's like Hull's probably most famous poet, isn't he? So I said to this woman, I said, "Oh look," I said, "they've got Philip Larkin's glasses," and she just went a bit deaf. She went, "What they got Cilla Black's glasses for?" Cilla Black. I went, "Well, she was very popular in Hull, wasn't she?" She went, "Well, I didn't know." I was like, "Yeah." I said,
Brilliant.
"Philip Larkin." Well, yeah, I mean, he's like I said, it just shows you there must be something in the water in Hull.
Thanks for listening. We're now available on all the major podcast platforms. Just search for Hull Libraries. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you can get all the latest episodes as soon as they're out.
In the meantime, if you want to check out any of the services at Hull Libraries, please go to our website, hcandl.co.uk/libraries, or we also have channels on all the social medias, including Twitter and Facebook. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.